Welcome to HealthScope on WMKV and WLHS. Each week at this time, we bring you updates on a different medical topic and open the phone lines for you to join the discussion. Now, HealthScope on 89.3 WMKV, 89.9 WLHS, and online at WMKVFM.org.
We welcome you to HealthScope here on WMKV and WLHS. Thank you so much for being with us. Whether you are a senior, a person with special needs, or a caregiver for one of the above, one of the greatest fears is that of falling. And we're going to find, as we discuss here with two very special guests with us from UC Health, that falling is not just something that happens to older people. We're going to talk today and we're going to learn from Dr. Dee Millar and Lauren Stenger, who is a nurse and the injury prevention coordinator at UC Health. The topic today, falls and injuries, and hopefully preventing them. These two people would rather not have people coming to them with falls. And this happens a lot in the home. First of all, we welcome Dr. Millar. He has a degree in microbiology from Brigham Young University. He has his MD degree from the University of Utah School of Medicine, a fellow in surgical critical care with the University of Cincinnati. He's been honored with several awards and honors and has led a number of committees during his medical career. He's raised in Salt Lake City, where I guess they're used to cold weather like this. I don't know. But he is now here in Cincinnati with his wife and four children. Dr. Millar, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, George, for having me.
And also joining us, Lauren Stenger. She is the injury prevention coordinator at UC Health. She graduated from Miami University with a degree in psychology, continued her education at Xavier University, my alma mater, to obtain her master's of science in nursing. She started her nursing career in the neuroscience intensive care unit at UCMC, and continued at Cincinnati Children's Medical Center on the neuro and trauma floor prior to taking her current position. Lauren, is in the early stages of growing and expanding the trauma injury prevention program with UC Health. Time permitting, we'll talk about that as well today. She's a member of the Ohio Injury Prevention Partnership and among many other organizations. Lauren, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to start first, before we get into all the questions proper, both of you are working in this trauma care and really trying to get the word out to help prevent traumas. What brought each of you to these areas of expertise or these areas of practice?
Well, the part of my training, I was always fascinated by traumatic injuries. These are things that patients were unable to plan for. Nobody planned on becoming severely injured.
Right.
It's not a sickness or a disease you generally prevent it against, just something bad that happened to people. And I really wanted to be the person to help pick up those pieces. But we're learning now, and with Lauren's help, that there's a lot we can do to prevent. However, the bulk of my practice is taking care of those who have been severely injured.
And Lauren, how did you come to this area?
I think starting my nursing career in an intensive care unit and also seeing some of the same type of injuries, the traumatic injuries that Dr. Millar has seen, it's pretty inspiring to see some of these people actually come through and come out on the other end and regain strength to walk again or speak again or any type of those things, and then preventing it on the front end.
So do both of you work largely with the emergency department? Is that where a lot of this comes into play?
The emergency department is our number one requesting division for our services. Mm-hmm. And the bulk of what we do begins in the emergency department. Most of these patients I'm seeing for the first time, they've come to the emergency department after a major event, motor vehicle crash. Most people show up to me on a backboard. Mm-hmm. They are sometimes incapacitated, and we begin all of their trauma care there in that environment. And that lasts for a short period of time, maybe 15 minutes, it might be an hour, and then we continue to care for them while they're in the hospital.
We've seen all the things from the old ER shows and all that where these people are brought in. And really having as much information as humanly possible does help in a very timely fashion, I would think, for treatment of any kind of trauma. Is that correct?
Yes.
We work pretty closely with our pre-hospital EMS professionals, and we do a lot of education for trauma care and important things that we want to hear from them when they come in through the door, and we have only a few seconds to minutes to understand what's going on.
We have Dr. Dee Millar here with us and Nurse Lauren Stenger. They're with UC Health. By the way, we'll give out a couple of times here that there is a trauma hotline, not drama, because then people from Playhouse in the Park would be calling, a trauma hotline at 513-584-6048. For somebody to have that number, that's probably a good number to have handy, especially because no one can predict when an accident might happen, and accidents can happen to there may be some people who are more prone to that, which we'll get to later in the program, but trauma can happen at any time. It could be somebody who's going out to change a light bulb on the porch outside and they fall off a ladder or something like that. Having this number handy is probably a very good idea. Would it be good for people to kind of have this near the phone?
This is a number that we'd encourage people to call if they have trauma-related questions.
Okay.
My first advice to anyone involved in a serious accident or injury is to contact 911 if you believe it's life-threatening. But we as a trauma center are also committed to helping people navigate the medical system as they try to seek help for their injuries.
And one other great contact that I should mention is, of course, uchealth.com/ Westchester Hospital. And we have Dr. Dee Millar and Nurse Lauren Stenger here with us. Dr. Millar, you started to enumerate some of the different things that you see people that come through the emergency department or the ED that they have. But I guess what are the most common traumatic injuries that you see people or people are coming to you and or Lauren with?
The most common mechanisms of injury that we see are related to either motor vehicle crash or to falls. We do see some degree of injury as a result of violence. But most of this is our accidental traumas. Depending on the hospital and its location, that kind of tells you what kind of injuries you might see. I spent a great deal of time at both the University Hospital and Westchester Hospital. But as an example, at Westchester, which is more of a growing populace, a community, it's away from downtown, we see a lot of motor vehicle crashes and falls, both young and elderly patients.
And once again, that's something that I alluded to at the beginning of the program, the fact that trauma doesn't just happen to my 89-year-old uncle or your grandfather or grandmother or mother or father. It can happen to any of us at any time. Again, as you pointed out, this is something that nobody really plans. Hey, I'm going to have a fall today. Lauren, from your standpoint, what do you see quite often and what's your take on do you do most of your practice at Westchester as well?
I'm based mainly downtown at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center.
So do you see a slightly different cross-section of injuries?
I don't see patients in the hospital. I see more of the patients outside in senior centers or in the community. And it seems to be – falls seems to be a pretty hot topic among our older adults. And it seems to be something that everyone has fallen themselves or they know someone who has fallen.
And it's very important to have good outreach so that people can either avoid having another fall or – I would imagine in the kind of outreach when you say that you see people sometimes at retiring communities, nursing homes, things like that. Is there an outreach program that helps people maybe prevent falls? That basically there's some education here.
There's most of the senior centers have their own programs. They'll do exercise programs that are tailored to increasing your strength and balance and flexibility. There's also community programs that educate and try and increase the awareness of the problem.
Later on in the program, I don't know if either one of you have had any chance to see anything with the Smart House, the University of Cincinnati, UC Health, the Smart House that's being done here in conjunction with Maple Knoll. I'll tell you a cool story about that, about fall prevention, where they're literally using video game technology to help people stay in their homes longer. It's something that would have cost tens of thousands of dollars to develop if they developed this unit that would monitor someone as they approach a falling position, and it can actually alert them and say, stand up. But they were able to use basically a Kinect video sensor or monitor a motion sensor from a video game to be able to help people stay in their homes longer by it reading the motion of their bodies. And basically the senior who's living at home wears a specific like an undershirt that has some nodes on it, and this thing reads where they are in their room or in their house, and it can actually warn them if they start leaning too far forward. Like if they're leaning over to get something, a voice activation can come up, or it can literally connect to a nurse in another portion of the University of Cincinnati Medical Center to actually talk to them. This is all in the development stages, but this ties right in, Lauren, with some of the things that we'll get you converted to the smart house. You've got to see this before you leave. Maybe not today if you don't have time. But we have Dr. Dee Millar and Lauren Stanger here with us, and we're talking about preventing falls or what happens after the fall or the trauma occurs. We'll refer to a lot of falls here because we have largely a senior audience and a caregiver audience. What population seems to be the most likely to become injured? Any numbers that you can share with us?
Down at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center, the average age of our older adults that fall is 62. It's a little bit higher up at Westchester. But more women seem to fall than men, but the mortality rate is higher for men when they fall.
So, and again, any fall can be damaging. Some people are very lucky. They have that fall. And for some people, if you have the fall and you don't really get hurt badly, you might get a little bruise or a bump or something like that. That's all. Sometimes that can be, if there's no real good reason for why that person fell, that might be a good thing to start talking with your physician about. If you have a fear of falling, or if you're a caregiver who has a fear that your loved one may be at risk of falling, that's probably a good idea to start talking about. So, sorry, that was a brilliant grasp of the obvious, I know. As we age, what is it about us, though? Especially, and again, it could be anyone with any special needs, and there are some people who have balance issues already, maybe due to previous trauma or due to an illness or something like that. They may not be able to really keep the best balance. But as we get older, it seems like that whole issue of falling takes on a greater and greater importance. What is it about us as we age?
Well, and it does. And George, as you're making comment of this, we're very concerned about falling. Mm-hmm. If you look at falls in general, near the end of life, this can be absolutely devastating and life-ending. And of our patients who fall nationwide, 1 in 5 of these patients who suffer a fall, they'll die within 30 days. And that's not just from the fracture or from the head injury, but it may actually be a result of the deconditioning, the time spent in bed from pain, inability to recover physically, and then they get in this spiral of worsening physical health. And so you're absolutely right. And there's things that make people more at risk for falls. When I was in my peak physical health, I was probably 18, 19 years old. Never more coordinated, never more fit, stronger. But as we tend to age, our physical activity declines.
Yes.
We're not as active. Our strength, our endurance decreases. We're not doing these normal activities that maintain muscle memory and coordination. We also then develop other impairments. Our vision gets worse. Hearing loss actually can increase your risk for falls. We are then also taking, many of us, multiple medications, especially those that control blood pressure, that will make you more likely to feel dizzy or lightheaded, to where your body can't respond to even the simple act of standing up quickly. Some of our medications even actually make patients slightly dizzy or impaired thinking and decision making. So those things combined with other aspects of aging, slower speed, loss of coordination, walking issues, diabetic feet, sensory problems in your feet, all of these things can increase your risk of a fall.
I would imagine also even just some of the normal aches and pains we get as we get older. Sometimes we compensate and, or sometimes you'll get maybe a shooting pain through a knee or something like that, and you literally feel like it's going to buckle out from under you.
Yes.
And you end up on the floor. And it's amazing what can happen to people. And now, you brought up something, Dr. Millar, and Lauren, feel free to jump in on this if you would like as well. You brought up the fact that some of the sensory issues can contribute to falls. And you brought up hearing, lack of hearing. I think a lot of people out there are going, wait, how would that contribute to falling?
Part of it is, I think, missing normal cues. We are programmed. You may not recognize that you hear yourself in space in your own home. It may be that you don't hear a cat or an animal. I can't tell you how
and
many.
Suddenly they're underfoot.
Oh, yes. I've taken care of so many elderly patients who either tripped on a vacuum cleaner cord, a dog, a cat, something that came out in front of them, some obstacle. And we really need all of our senses to engage our environment appropriately.
And that's one of the things, especially when you talk about human hearing, the part that tends to go first is, and I taught audio for years at Xavier, but the thing that tends to go first are the higher frequency. So if you've got a cat or a dog, maybe they have a little bell or something on the collar, as you get older, you're less likely to actually hear that cue that they might be coming up behind you or about to run in front of you. And we all know what pets can do.
Yeah.
We love our pets, but sometimes they're not exactly in the right place. You know, another issue that I'd like to bring up, and I may be jumping ahead here, but another issue that becomes a big consideration, I think, as we get older are steps. I mean, that's definitely, you know, the house that maybe you moved into when you were in your 20s and 30s, or even into your 50s and early 60s, that house, that bi-level or, you know, tri-level, whatever, that has all these steps. Suddenly, as we get older, that becomes a little bit greater of a danger in addition to a little bit more of a burden. But tell us, what are some good practices on steps? Obviously, handrails seem to me, making sure that those are secure. If you're a caregiver, I would think securing handrails and making sure that there are handrails in homes is a really good idea.
And to touch on the handrails comment, it's important to have a handrail on either side of the staircase. Most people in their homes just have handrail on one, but it's important to have two. Even, I mean, outside your home, if there's steps coming into your home, if there's steps in the basement, steps going upstairs. A lot of older adults have their laundry in the basement.
Yes.
So going up and down a couple of times a day is just going to increase their risk for a fall if they're unsteady on their feet.
That's a great point. And just something that, you know, people sometimes we just take for granted. If I'm going over to visit my uncle or something, and he doesn't have steps where he is now, but he had steps at one point, you take for granted you can run up and down those steps all day when you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s. And you have to realize, and you have to kind of have a little bit of an exercise in empathy for that loved one and what kind of infrastructure they need to be able to navigate that safely. Because I think for many people, and feel free to jump in on either of these, for many people, their goal is to try to stay at home as long as humanly possible, as long as it's safe, right?
I think that's our goal, too, is helping people be more aware of their issues so they can feel independent and stay in their home longer. I think a lot of home modifications is a big preventative step for fall prevention. And I think people are afraid to let people in their home to make those changes because they're going to take them out of it, their home. But the goal is to keep everyone in their home and keep them safe.
And Dr. Millar, I mean, that's one of the things you quite often, as you said, you see people very much after an accident's already happened, after something or a fall or something like that has happened. We'll talk about the whole issue of whether it's an accident, whatever, coming up. But when you see that, as you said, for some people, that traumatic incident, it may just take that one traumatic incident that can lead them into a spiral if they're not in the best condition or if they're laid up to the point where they can't really recover quickly.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the devastating side of our practice. When you see the 89-year-old patient who has now fallen down their stairs, broken a hip, broken a neck, multiple broken ribs, requiring surgery. And when we see those patients, we know they're initially not going to be going back into their home. They're not capable of caring for themselves at home, even with lots of family support. And so preventing these things is paramount. And a lot of that is recognizing your risk factors, trying to modify them, and, you know, trying to help yourself and or your loved ones that you're caring for avoid these risks.
Is it really a good idea maybe for the caregiver or for the person living in that home to do a quick survey? I know when our daughter was on the way many years ago, she's 24 now, but I remember when she was on the way and we did all the things to baby-proof our home. Is there a point at which, or is there any kind of a program where people can start to fall-proof their home, or at least create fall prevention? Are there surveys or things that maybe families should be doing together to say we need to make this a little safer for mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or aunt or uncle, for anybody in our lives?
There's a multitude of resources as fall prevention becomes a hot topic across the nation, and it's only going to get worse as the baby boomers age a little bit. And if you just even Google, looking at the CDC's, the Center for Disease Control website, there's checklists you can take into your own home with your caregiver and run through. It's putting grab bars in the bathroom or getting rid of throw rugs.
Yeah, I was going to say bathrooms are one of the big areas because you add water to the whole equation.
Exactly.
And holy moly, yeah, time permitting later, we can talk about that. It wasn't on our overall list of questions, but I would imagine bathrooms are a big area.
It's very common.
Yes. And again, water is a great lubricant. And if you're not careful.
Yep.
Now, I want to come back, though, to the whole idea of. Dr. Millar, you mentioned, you know, with breaks, especially broken hips. We hear about broken hips and falls. Never thought as much about, like, the broken neck. But I imagine somebody going down steps could easily suffer multiple fractures. Is there something about our age as we – or about our bones as we age – that maybe we can help to solidify those bones a little bit more? You hear all different kinds of maladies where people's bones become more brittle. They may actually, you know, they're more likely to break as people get older. But what can we do to help strengthen our bones and keep our bones and maybe the muscle structure around it, which helps to support those bones, I would imagine, keep it a little bit stronger, help maybe withstand a fall?
Yeah, when you think about an adult who falls, they're different than children. I was roller skating with my son 2 weeks ago, and I was deathly afraid the entire time of falling. But I watched him fall at least 20 or 30 times and get up and keep going. And as we age, our bones are – you're right. They are more brittle. But remember, we're also higher from the ground than
yes,
we've ever been.
Farther to go.
And even though you've aged, you don't necessarily shrink down to the point that you're a child. So you're falling from greater heights. We generally are heavier. We weigh more than we did 20, 30 years ago. Yep. In most of our society, obesity is on the rise. And so we are a heavier people. And so our falls hurt more. Our bones are more brittle. Your body is continually – as you age, your calcium intake is not as high as it once was, and so we then cannibalize our own bones for the calcium that our blood needs and our heart needs to maintain normal physiology. And along with that, you're not as strong. Your muscle mass is declining, so your ability to resist that fall, to protect yourself, goes down. And so we do see a variety of injuries. We see a lot of broken hips. Which is really your proximal femur, some pelvic fractures. It's very common for older patients to fall, even just from standing, and have multiple fractures in their back or even in their neck. We see a lot of proximal arm fractures up near the shoulder, and rib fractures are very common. And so as you're looking at these things, there are a few things that these older patients can do to prevent against the possible injury associated with fall. One of that is strengthening themselves, daily strength training. And that is no longer lifting weights necessarily. That may be engaging in some kind of an aerobic or flexibility training type scenario. Medications, working with your primary care doctor to know what your blood chemistry is, to get an idea as to whether or not you are deficient in vitamin D or calcium, these essential nutrients for maintaining healthy bones, and then assessing your other risk factors with your medications and your own dexterity for fall.
So there are some things we can do to at least take some precautions in addition to physically altering the environment, like putting up better handrails, things like that. But also just to take better care of ourselves as we get older is really important. Lauren, this is an area when I brought this up before the program, you're like, yes, this is an area that we need to talk about. What are some of the tips that you would give to people in addition to what Dr. Millar just said?
One of the biggest things that I hear from our older adults is they're afraid to talk to their primary care doctor about it. Most of the people tell me that they fall a couple of times and they don't want to have a conversation about it, which is, I think, step one. If you fall, you need to talk to your primary care doctor about it and then talk about all these other different risk factors that you could have that you can hopefully modify and prevent. Getting a yearly eye exam and a yearly hearing exam is important. people have said, you know, we talked about hearing earlier, but once they get a different hearing aid or their glasses adjusted, it's a world of difference for them.
We're here on WMKV and WLHS. The program is Health Scope. Our special guest, Dr. Dee Millar and Nurse Lauren Stenger. They are with UC Health. You can find out more at uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. The trauma hotline, which is a good one, again, as Dr. Millar pointed out, if you have an immediate emergency, nothing replaces dialing 911. But if you have trauma-related questions and it's a non-life-threatening situation, 513-584-6048, 513-584-6048. Always a good number to have near the phone as well. And we're talking today about falls, about trying to prevent falls, if at all possible. Dr. Dee Millar and Lauren Stenger are here. Lauren is involved as the Injury Prevention Coordinator at UC Health. Dr. Millar comes to us from Salt Lake City, and he has seen a lot of work in this area with a background also in microbiology, which is pretty cool stuff. But we're talking today largely about falls. Before we go to our break here in the middle of the show, what about people who have that initial fall? Not only, I contend, as a caregiver, not only are they afraid to talk to their physician about it, I think they're afraid to talk to their family about it because the first fear may be, oh, this is going to, they're going to take me out of my home because I fell once. And most families don't want to see that loved one have to go into some other care. They would rather try to beef up, I would think, the environment that the person's in to keep them at home. But I think there's also an inherent fear of falling within that person. Number one, they're afraid to talk to other people about it. And then they have this internalized fear of, now I'm afraid to do this again. Or it may take them a day or even more sometimes to really work up the nerve to get back up. I mean, I don't mean from the fall, but to get back up on their feet and want to try to walk again.
Right. And the fear of falling is one of the biggest risk factors. It just makes their risk higher because they're afraid to do anything and they're not moving as much. And it's just kind of putting all these pieces together. It's making the home modifications, and it's focusing on exercising and kind of keeping at all these steps to eventually help yourself prevent yourself from falling.
And also, I would think that most caregivers are, you know, after maybe that initial panic, like, oh, my goodness, you fell, I think most of the caregivers are going to want to try to get you back on your feet. They don't want to see you just sitting there or laying in bed or whatever, not doing anything. Moving is a big part of healthy aging, in my opinion. But, you know, that's one of the things that I think sometimes the fear to talk about it fuels this other fear that, oh, I'm going to fall again. They're going to take me out of the house. And that can be really, really stressful for the individual who has fallen. And so but one of the things I think can we all at least say that it is something you need to talk to somebody about, whether it's a caregiver, a friend, or to, as you said, Lauren, your physician. I mean, don't let it get to the point where if you're lucky enough to have fallen and not have incurred anything other than a bruise, it's really something that you really should start the discussion.
And a thing to talk about is we don't know what we don't know. So if you don't have these conversations, there's so many resources out there that other people may have for you.
Yeah. And are all injuries considered what are called accidents, I guess? Is falling just a normal part of aging? I mean, I think we're trying to debunk that we don't have to always be falling as we get older.
I would argue that falling is not a normal part of aging. Is it a side effect? Is it something that can happen as a result of many illnesses? Yes. But as a society, we shouldn't look at falling as normal. And we should see a fall as a major red flag that there is something wrong, either something wrong physically, mm-hmm. medically. It might be medication-induced. And there are things that we can recognize and say, wow, we could really avoid doing this again. So I think one fall in an elderly patient should be taken as a sentinel event to start a process to make sure it never happens again.
We have Dr. Dee Millar here with us and Nurse Lauren Stanger. By the way, if you have questions about falling issues, trauma, you can give us a call here in the second half of the program. Both Dr. Dee Millar and Nurse Lauren Stanger are with UC Health. More information at uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. Their trauma hotline, downtown, 513-584-6048 as well. And you can give us a call here on WMKV HealthScope if you have a question today. Our number is 513-772-9658 or our toll-free number, 877-772-9658. We'll be back with more with Dr. Dee Millar and Nurse Lauren Stanger from UC Health on HealthScope coming up next.
The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program or of WMKV Radio, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS Radio, the Lakota Local School District, or its staff or management. Discussion of specific points and general topics on this program are not meant to be taken as specific professional advice.
And we're back on HealthScope on WMKV and WLHS, having some wonderful off-air discussions as well with Dr. Dee Millar and Nurse Lauren Stanger from UC Health. Again, more information, and we thank so much Westchester Hospital for their support of WMKV and helping to provide some wonderful physicians and nurses to come out here, healthcare professionals who help us. You can find out more at uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. The trauma hotline for UC Health is 513-584-6048. We're talking today about falls, and this is one of those things, and in some cases, it may be preventable. Sometimes trauma is just going to happen because trauma is going to happen. We were talking about things, everything from an accidental fall, maybe in the home when you're trying to fix something, you're up on a ladder, or somebody stumbling down the steps, or a vehicular accident or something like that. Trauma will happen to people at most times. Somebody's going to experience some form of trauma, most likely sometime in their life. And we're talking today about just some ideas for helping prevent or reduce the risk of some of these traumatic things happening, especially in the home. Do most traumas that you all see, I know you mentioned things like car accidents and whatnot, but do a lot of them happen in the home itself? Is that where a lot of this happens?
Most of the falls do happen in people's own home, and then following that is in residential institutions.
And we learned in the first half of the show from Dr. Millar the fact that, you know, you don't think about this until you hear somebody explain it, that, you know, when we're kids, the most I'm going to fall is a foot, you know, down onto the ground or something. Yeah, you'll scrape up your knee and all that, but you don't have near the weight pressure and all that. And even though I've been accused of looking like a human bubble wrap, sometimes all that extra weight from either fat or muscle mass or things like that, sometimes that weight can add to the severity of a fall. Is that correct? Weight can be a real problem there. I like to look at it and say, well, I've got more padding if I fall, but that weight tends to put more stress on the bones, the muscles, and everything. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So taking better care of ourselves as we get older is a good idea. It helps to strengthen our bones, finding ways to strengthen our bones and our muscles. These are some of the takeaways from the first half of the program. And also looking at our environment to make sure that we're in the safest possible environment that we can be in. We're all humans, and we're all still going to do stupid things. We've seen all the commercials for the insurance companies where the guy still has his bike strapped to the top of his car and pulls in his garage, things like that. Those things are going to happen, but, you know, there are times where we are going to experience something like that. Are there other risk factors? We talked about environmental. We've talked about some of the physical things. Dr. Millar and Lauren, you both mentioned the fact that medications and sometimes interactions of medications can be a culprit here, too, in either affecting somebody's blood pressure, which can make you lightheaded, or one of the side effects, if you will, of the medication can sometimes be dizziness or lightheadedness, especially if you get up very quickly. So medication comes into play here as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
I think it's common for people to get prescribed medication and then think that that's their only option to take it. For example, blood pressure medication, if it makes you kind of dizzy upon standing up, maybe you could talk to your primary care doctor about taking it at a different time during the day, if it's easier to take it at night before you go to sleep.
That's a great point. And again, I think the other thing that's very important is if you see multiple different physicians, making sure that the physicians have the most complete list of medications that you may have. A particular specialist may know that you're taking this drug, but they may not know your entire other regimen. Now, I will say, Dr. Millar, most physicians now are getting very good about trying to keep the most up-to-date list of medications. But does that even include things like over-the-counter medications and things like that?
We try. Now in the 21st century with the electronic medical record, as long as patients and their physicians are keen at using it, we have access in almost real time to what their real medications are. But we're only as good as how much we report or hear from the patient to know what people are really taking. And there are some over-the-counter medications that can increase your sense of dizziness or sleepiness that can increase your risk of falls. But to echo what Lauren was saying, the key is to have a good relationship with your primary care physician. And every patient needs at least one physician who is in their corner, who is their quarterback, that will manage all of their care globally. Many times we see patients who have a kidney doctor, they have a lung doctor, have a heart doctor, and a regular medicine doctor. But everybody should have at least one who manages all their medications. And don't be afraid to ask or to tell those physicians your complaints. I feel like my metoprolol is making me dizzy and lightheaded. I felt more short of breath since starting to take this medication. My vision seems funny. These are all side effects that are normal, but as a physician, if you don't know about them, we can't intervene. I would not advise you to stop taking your medications, but have that conversation with your doctor and have it be an open relationship as if they're your friend. And get that relationship up to par so that you too can manage your medications appropriately.
And from a physician standpoint, I would imagine many primary care physicians, whether an internist or something like that, they probably know things about that patient that maybe that patient's not even making known to their family in many cases, because they may have fears about this or that. So the doctor in many cases is one of the best sounding boards. Not only is he or she probably the most knowledgeable about the question you're about to ask, but they also will, that you can confide in them.
I agree. And we have such a great and awesome responsibility as physicians to help prolong life, to ensure quality of life. And it is a wonderful relationship that we have with our patients. And we only want the best for our patients. We want them to feel happy and healthy. And part of doing that is understanding them, having them understand us, and working together.
And that's so important. Lauren, anything can you add to that? That was pretty profound. But
very profound. A recommendation that we often give is keep your medicines on a little card in your wallet, on a little piece of paper. And you can sit down with your pharmacist or your primary care doctor and have them list them all out for you, what time you take it, why you take it, side effects. It not only helps us if you come through the door in our emergency department to know what you're on, what you're taking, but also just to keep yourself organized.
And I would say, too, the thing to remember that you know your body better than anybody else. And if you suspect any kind of possible side effect of a drug, that is the time to bring it up immediately to your physician to say, you know, I noticed, boy, I just started taking this. And sometimes I imagine there are some drugs that might take a day or two for you to get used to. You might have some side effects, but if you're noticing this over an extended period of time and it's only been since you started drug X, whatever that is, that's a good thing to bring up to your physician and say, you know, is there some other option here, or could this be part of the issue? And the other thing is, I guess, too, some people will call like a pharmacist and ask about that as well, but really it's good to keep your doctor in the loop on these kinds of things. Very, very important. So we're talking about the medication. We're talking about just the overall physical aging that we have. We're talking about the environment. We've already talked kind of some ways that we can protect ourselves from falling. It's always the possibility that it could happen. How do you get over the hurdle of trying to get someone to use a cane or a walker if I could ask. Any ideas that maybe I'm sure there are other caregivers like me who went through a period. My uncle had his hip replacement. It was not due to a break. It was arthritic. And he fought like the dickens. He didn't want to use a cane. Then he said, well, okay, I'll use the cane. But he came close to falling a couple of times. He fell once and then started on the walker. And he didn't like the walker. But eventually, I think he almost fell again. And that kind of convinced him. Is there any, I wish that there was some magical thing that we could say to somebody in that position to say, you can always wean yourself back off of it, but get on it and work with it. It seems to me anyway. I don't know. I don't want to put words in either one of your mouths. You're the professionals in this area.
I think that's a great question for a physical or an occupational therapist who are actually working with that patient and teaching them how to use it. Mm-hmm. These are conversations nobody wants to have to use any type of aid. I think it makes people probably feel fearful that they're declining in their life when really some of those things can be used to prolong their independence in their own home. That's a mm-hmm. tough conversation to have, though.
And you even mentioned, too, that some people will just start picking up the cane or maybe they don't pay as much attention in the PT or the physical therapy areas. And you said you've even seen people who are, you know, they're misusing the cane. They're using it in the wrong hand, things like that.
That's correct. It's a big educational piece, I think, just explaining why the patient needs it and how it's going to help them.
And it's very important. And actually, that's something that I wonder if either of you have a feeling. If somebody goes for physical therapy after maybe a fall and they're now getting back on their feet, they're doing this, is it a good idea maybe to have a family member come with them to maybe help, especially if it's an older person? I don't know how the feeling is, and neither one of you are a physical therapist, but it would seem to me like having a family member at least come to some of the initial meetings would be a good idea so that it can be reinforced by the caregiver.
I think that the more people that are involved and that are able to help reinforce that behavior for mm-hmm. the patient, the better. And we shouldn't look at these adaptive tools as signs of aging or as in a derogatory way. When I see them, when I see elderly patients using these adaptive devices, I see someone who has embraced their health and their future to avoid injury, and I am more excited that they are physically active, that they
yes.
are willing to get up and go. Even our young trauma patients who are severely injured, they end up with four-wheel walkers mm-hmm. and with canes and crutches, and we highly encourage them. In fact, we demand of them that they get out of bed and move, and yeah. they have to use these adaptive devices. So, you know, our charge to everyone is, let's get moving, and let's do it safe and do it right.
And there is something – my uncle now calls it his motorcycle. So I think he's come to an acceptance of it, and he realizes that that is really his key to getting around.
Yeah.
And he's tried a couple of times. He's really worked to try to not use it, and he realizes there comes a point where you say, I don't want to fall again. I don't want to have this happen to me again, and I realize that this is my best option to keep moving and to keep the freedoms that I have. I just maybe have to use this apparatus. So it is. It's a learning curve, I think, for many people, and something that they don't want to necessarily learn. If you're just joining us here on HealthScope, we have open phone lines at 772-9658 or 877-772-9658. We're talking about fall prevention. We're talking about trauma with Dr. Dee Millar and Nurse Lauren Stenger with UC Health. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we still have a few minutes left to go in the program here. And once again, we're talking about trying to prevent people from falling and what to do if you have that first fall and what to do, what happens next. I imagine, too, many people are afraid to talk to their families sometimes because the family may all disagree. There may be one person in the family who says, okay, let's fix up the house and let's get them ready to go. Another person in the family may say, no, they need to go into some kind of assisted living because they've fallen this one time. I imagine that from a nurse's standpoint and from a doctor's standpoint, that sometimes you must encounter different family issues here where different caregivers or different members of families sometimes have a kind of a tough, almost a tug of war over what to do.
speaking from personal experience, I have a fairly large family, and everyone of the siblings of my grandma thinks that they know best, mm-hmm. that they know everything.
And it's all done out of love.
And it is all done out of love, and it's a wonderful environment. But I think these are important conversations to have with your older adult, whether it's your grandma or your own mother or father, before they start to decline in their health. Understand what they want. Understand what's important to them.
And I would imagine, Dr. Millar, have you ever had somebody who you've seen and you see them after the trauma happens who said, boy, I wish I had listened and maybe stayed on or used that walker or used that cane? Does anybody ever indicate anything like that, or where they had the warning and they didn't heed it maybe?
Well, it is not uncommon to see a patient who's had multiple falls. It was actually just this last week I had a patient who had presented with fall number 5 or 6, covered with large bruises, and you know, this time still did not have a gross, obvious injury, but was severely debilitated. And so the family, their question was, should we have brought her in sooner? Should we have had, you know, a higher concern for her? And the answer is yes. We should all, you know, treat that first fall as a serious event. And I have not had the conversation with family specifically of to ask them, hey, do you wish you would have used the walker? Because it's really after the fact.
Right, right. And you don't want to be rubbing salt into the wound, so to speak.
Right.
But at the same time, I think it is important for the family to become maybe a little more. And the family always wants to think it's an isolated incident. Definitely, I could see the first time the family doesn't even want to come to grips with this.
Right.
But when you hear it happen again, and that's maybe time to start maybe calling the doctor, if nothing else.
Definitely. And there's a couple things you really have to consider there is, one, you should really worry, what's the cause of the fall? Is it preventable? The second is going to be, what are the ramifications of the fall? An average hospital admission for a fall runs around $34,000.
Wow.
And that is because, and that's average. So that takes into account all of these small injuries and the big injuries. And the things the first things that come to mind are a broken hip or a broken arm or some broken ribs. But the more devastating injuries are severe injuries of the neck or the back leading to paralysis. It might be a major head injury with a head bleed. And we worry about these older patients because many of them are also on blood thinners. Mm-hmm. They're on Coumadin or some of these newer drugs to thin their blood to prevent them from having a stroke. But a fall on a blood thinner is a horrible recipe for disaster. Now, I'm not advocating that patients don't use them, but what patients should recognize is if I'm at risk for fall or my parent who's on a blood thinner, maybe we should be having a talk with our doctor about the risks of a stroke versus the risks of actually falling and having a serious bleeding complication. Mm-hmm. And so we see, you know, as Lauren works in the world of prevention, and I work in the world of recovery and how to prevent immediate complication. And those are the most common things I see is how can we have prevented it? Oh, no, did my blood thinners or my high-dose antiplatelet agents, did these make my symptoms worse? And we try to then decrease the risk after they've been injured.
So important. And it's really interesting because we do have kind of the best of both worlds here. We have Lauren trying to prevent people from falling. As you said, you're treating them after the trauma happens. And there are so many what ifs that we can all look back on. And the key here is if somebody does fall in your family and you're a caregiver, is not necessarily to beat yourself up, but to learn from it.
Yeah,
you can sit there and beat yourself up. What has happened, but it's how you react now to prevent something worse from happening in the future is really an important thing. And I speak from a caregiver's perspective, so forgive me for getting on my soapbox here. You know, I have to mention that one of the things that, and I know the two of you have not been too terribly involved with this yet, this is an experimental program between the engineering department and the School of Medicine at the University of Cincinnati. It is called the Smart House, and I would urge people to look into this. It's here at Maple Knoll Village. They have they've taken one of the old what was a cottage, which was an independent living area, and they have it rigged with all kinds of sensors, where people, the goal here is to live in your home the longest possible. And ways that people can interact through either robotics, through different types of sensors, with nurses, with physicians, and actually creating a home that is safer for people. And what I mentioned was the whole, if you've ever played the Wii, I think it is, where they have the little hand things that you, if you want a bowl or whatever, it senses the motion of the thing in your hand, and it, on the video screen, you throw a ball down the alley or something. Well, there's a sensor that is about maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet long, that reads these motions. And some of the engineering students at the University of Cincinnati have actually created a device using the Wii thing. And again, that would have cost maybe tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop something totally new. They were able to use adaptive technology to create this so that if someone is, let's say, standing up on a walker, it can sense their motion. And if they start to lean too far forward, let's say they're trying to reach for something on a shelf, once they hit beyond a certain angle, they get a voice thing saying, please be careful, you may be, you know, and what it'll do is it'll get, maybe get the person to come back into reality and thinking, you know, maybe I need to take another couple of steps to get closer to this. But there are all kinds of things involved with this that the University of Cincinnati, I think it's just fantastic what they're doing here. And I've had a chance to walk through this and talk to some of the engineering students and a few of the nursing staff who are involved with this. And it's tremendous. So something that I'm sure both of you will be hearing more about. It's still pretty much a fledgling program. But the Smart House at Maple Knoll Village, which is part of the University of Cincinnati program in this, is just incredible. And the thing that struck me when I heard that both of you were coming out today was falls. The whole idea, part of this technology, is to prevent people from falling and keep people in their homes longer. Until we have that kind of technology, one of the other things that I think a lot of caregivers don't realize is that after a fall, or someone is injured, or they have a fall and they didn't really get injured badly, but the debate rages as to whether they have that person in now in assisted living or whether they can stay at home, is the fact that there are agencies and organizations that help people stay in their home longer so that the caregiver doesn't have to be there 24/7. Is that correct?
That is correct. There's a multitude of options out there, actually, whether it's someone to run errands for you or bring you a meal. I mean, they're almost endless.
And once again, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes talking to a social worker at the hospital, mm-hmm. sometimes, and I would imagine, Dr. Millar, after a fall, sometimes social workers do get involved. Is that correct?
You know, I think that most of my elderly patients, our social worker is more important to them than I am.
Wow.
That's, shake their hand
and
cheer for them.
That's coming from the physician who's healing these people.
It is. And, you know, it is not just me. You know, we have an army of healthcare providers that each have their own unique role. And our social workers and case managers, their expertise is finding the right place, the right mm-hmm. home, the right needs for our individual patients. And it's individualized, it's customizable. And in a world where insurance sometimes limits your resources, your options, these social workers are absolute wizards at identifying
workers, yes.
What can we do with what we've been given.
Yes, exactly.
And we love and appreciate them.
And they have a great background. And the nice thing is when you deal with, just as you deal with a physician or a nurse, as we are here on this program, we realize that when something happens, you've seen a lot of things. The same thing with that social worker. You may think you have a unique situation. Odds are that social worker, just as this physician or this nurse sitting here with me, has probably seen it before.
Yeah.
You don't have to reinvent the wheel. And you also know that you have experienced people helping you prevent falls, as Lauren Stenger is, and also treating you if the fall happens or after the trauma happens, as Dr. D. Millar has. We are already out of time. Any final words you would like to leave with people to hopefully help them prevent falling, Lauren, or Dr. Millar, for better healing after, hopefully, or hopefully not, a trauma? any final words?
I think just it's important to empower our older adults to take these preventative measures into their own hands and have these conversations with their primary care, because patient safety is our number one goal.
Our focus is on quality of life. Don't be afraid to ask the hard questions, like why am I falling? Am I still safe to live in my home? We want you to enjoy life to its fullest and to get the help that you need.
Hear, hear. Dr. Dee Millar, Nurse Lauren Stenger, both with UC Health, and thank you to Deb Teitelbaum as well for coming on out here again and providing us with some wonderful guests. Thank you for all that you're doing to help people in our community.
You.
Thank you so much. You can find out more at uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. That trauma hotline, again, probably a good thing to have near that phone, whether you're a caregiver or for any reason. Heck, if you're out pruning trees, you never know what will happen. I've had a branch fall on my head. 513-584-6048. That's the trauma hotline for UC Health. Thanks for joining us here on WMKV and WLHS and HealthScope.
You've been listening to HealthScope on WMKV and WLHS and streaming around the world at WMKVFM.org. Join us each week at this time for a discussion of the latest in medical technology issues and topics on 89.3 WMKV, 89.9 WLHS, and online at WMKVFM.org.